One of the things I was thinking about as I was preparing, we're going through a study. We've been studying the book of Genesis, really the Old Testament, kind of an overview of the Old Testament. But then we've been focused here for the past few weeks on Joseph. And as I was thinking about the position of Joseph, I was looking out in front of my house. And our cat, it's actually my daughter's cat, is named Blossom. And it's a female. But now the reason she was staring like that is there was a mockingbird that was mocking her. And the bird was like twittering and tweeting and out of range, right? And she was sitting there like that, just like all eyes. And I just thought it was funny because she was sitting on that wall and just staring like this. And she's also not really showing the bird all of her moves at this point. She's kind of like you know, kind of how she has her feet tucked under her. And she's sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting. And one of the things she's doing now, she still hasn't caught it. She's still waiting. She's still in the middle of this. But you know, if you could, one of the things that happens is patience is kind of what we're going to be talking about today. And patience occurs when you're waiting. And honestly, you have patience when you don't realize you have it. If you're just waiting and you don't realize that you have patience, that means you have it. You can really only tell when you don't have it. Like, when will this end? And one of the things I noticed about cats, they're pretty patient when it comes to birds. We got her because when we first got our house, at night sometimes you would hear scurrying in the attic that made it feel like there might be a possibility of some friendly rodentia living in our house. So then what we did, we got the cat, and you know what? All of a sudden, everything just quieted right down. And now I'm not sure what happened in between there, but I do know that you now hear no noise from mice. They might have just got the word and left, or they might, you know, we're not going to talk about, you know, what happens when cats get a hold of them, but I have seen her with a couple of them, so I know all of them didn't get away. Let's put it that way. So anyhow, patience is you know, the one of the things I think, I like the old King James, when it says, which I used for like 20 years, and now I don't really use it very much, but I think the verse in Romans 5, where it says, talking about Christ and how we know him, and by whom also we have access by faith into this grace wherein we stand, and rejoice in hope of the glory of God. Not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience. Or in the one I use today, it says, but we also glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulations produces perseverance. Which is patience, perseverance, the same idea. But I like the idea of patience because what happens is things are going on in your life that you don't like. And you're waiting and you're like, God, let me make this end. And God is teaching you. And he's working in your life. And you're like, God, won't you do anything? And God is doing something. And you just don't recognize it. We're talking about essential Old Testament. We're going to go on to our text here in just a second. Essential Old Testament, and we have been talking about Joseph. And in the month or so we've been talking about Joseph, I was talking to Steve this week, and he suggested this illustration to me, which I decided to go, I thought was a great idea. So I'm also one that if you give me a great idea, I am totally willing to borrow it. Usually no credit. He got credit today, so that's good. My son always says, how can you use my ideas and never say anything? Oh, well, you probably got the idea from me, so whatever. So Joseph, you know, he was born. He was the oldest son of Rachel. And if you were kind of tracking his life as if it were, you know, on a graph, you'd go, man, he was born. He was obviously immediately Jacob's favorite, and then you could see when Jacob got him that special coat, and he's like, he announces to everybody, this is my favorite son. I've got 12, but this one's number one, even though he was born 11th. And the other 10 of the other brothers weren't that thrilled with that. So they kind of changed the position of Joseph a bit. He went out to check him. They grabbed him. We're going to kill him. They finally decided better to get some money than actually nothing. So they sold him as a slave. He went to Egypt. Once he got to Egypt, he was bought by a guy named Potiphar. He worked as a slave. He ended up becoming, you think, man, okay, he's coming back. And he's still a slave, but he becomes manager of the whole household. Everything is under his control except for Potiphar's wife, who then accuses him of attempted rape. And once he's accused, Potiphar goes with his wife's story, throws Joseph in jail. So he's gone from, top down. Now he's kind of coming up a little bit. Oh, now back in jail. In jail again, he's faithfully good. He becomes the head of all the prisoners and overseeing the jail, and things are coming up again. Then a couple of the king's officials are thrown into prison too. And so while they're in prison, they have some dreams. Joseph interprets the dreams and he tells them what's going to happen. And that's looking good. And Joseph's been, okay, it's really good. Then one of them, the baker, as the dream suggested, as Joseph's interpretation of the dream said, he's put to death. And the butler or the cupbearer, he is restored to his position. And so Joseph goes, when you go back to your position, could you remember me? And the cupbearer doesn't. So he's forgotten. Now he's there in prison. He's forgotten. Really, since the place where he was sold as a slave until this time, more than 10 years have passed of him being a slave in Potiphar's house, being in jail, being accused a couple times, things going up and down. This is a 10-year period. And we know that from some of the things we're going to find out eventually. So over in Genesis 41, that's where we are now. And after two whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile seven cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed glass. And behold, seven other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the seven attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke. So he has his dream. He goes, last week we talked about the dreams of the butler and the baker, or the cupbearer and the baker, and kind of the whole concept of you have dreams and they're just weird and weird things happen. And what does this mean? And so this dream, Pharaoh's dreaming, and out of the Nile comes, let's see if we got these guys, these seven fat cows. Okay. And then then out of the Nile comes seven skinny cows, and skinny and kind of ugly cows. And then the skinny, ugly cows eat all the fat cows. And Pharaoh wakes up like, what is that? And what does that mean? And then he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, seven ears of plump grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. And behold, after them sprouted seven ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. So he's got a big one and he's got a little one. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven plump ears. Okay. So he's got, you have the big fat cows get eaten by the skinny, ugly cows. You've got the plump grain gets eaten by the skinny grain. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning, his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. And so Pharaoh explains this to everybody that's dream interpreters. They're all certified. They have their license to interpret dreams, and they don't know what this means. Fat cows eaten by skinny cows. Fat grain eaten by skinny grain. There's seven cows. There's seven fat cows, seven skinny cows, seven fat ears of grain, seven skinny ears of grain. What does this mean? and they eat them, and there's no change. What? You know, they can't figure it out. And so then the chief cupbearer, who was from last chapter, who Joseph interpreted his dream, the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today. I just remembered. This is nice for Joseph. He has been sitting in jail for 2 extra years because of this. I remember my offense today when Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard. We dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. And a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. When we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted it to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. And so Pharaoh's heard this finally, you know, hey, remember me. Hey, remember me. Okay, finally, when there was a need, he remembers it. I think a lot of times this happens to us. When you're walking by faith, you're living, you're doing something because you feel like the Lord wanted you to do it. You feel, man, Jesus just told me to do this, so I do it. And then you think, well, the person's going to totally remember this. They don't. But then when they have a need, all of a sudden they go, yeah, I remember this. I remember. And part of the whole lesson that God was teaching Joseph is, you know what? You interpreted this guy's dream. You asked him, hey, could you remember this? He forgot about you. And you know what? God's telling Joseph, I'm working in it. Just wait. Be patient. My cat's still sitting on that thing waiting for that bird. But it believes that one day that bird's going to make a mistake. That bird's going to get too close. And you know, sometimes you're in a position where, man, I helped them. I did this. They needed this. I did that. And then once they got what they wanted, man, they just totally forgot about me. Might be the truth. Join Joseph. You're in pretty good company. But you know what? The thing that normally happens is when there's a need. I had a guy that used to make fun of me all the time. He'd always want to tease me. Oh, he knew I was a Christian, and he would just tease me about it. And then, which is fine, you know, whatever. Yeah, I'm a Christian. Have fun teasing. Ha ha ha. I like you laughing at me, but that's cool. But then one day I saw him walking down the street, and he's like, hey, John, I need to talk to you. Well, what happened? He goes, hey, my dad just died, and I want to talk to you. Then we talked a little bit. Then, okay, pretty soon he was kind of feeling okay. Then I saw him again a few months later, and he's walking down the street. He goes, John, I really need to talk to you. Well, what happened? Well, my wife had a baby, but it was full term, and it died at childbirth. I want to talk to you. Well, before he didn't really feel like he had any kind of need. But when he did have a need, he knew where to go. This cupbearer, he didn't have any big need until he had a need. And once he had the need, oh, I know who could help us. Joseph. And you may be in a position where you're like, man, I don't know what's going on. And later on, all of a sudden somebody remembers you and thinks about you and goes, oh, that's the person. And I think one of the lessons God wants to teach us is, you know what, the world doesn't work on our time schedule. The world doesn't run by my clock. The world doesn't run what's going on in somebody else's life. That I don't determine that. God knows when it's happening. God knows what that person needs. And God also knows what you need. And if God gave us everything we want the moment we asked for it, we'd get pretty spoiled. And if you don't believe me, just ask yourself of all the things that you just get spoiled with right now. You go to other countries, you see a man, you don't have, like we get really upset. Look, oh man, they were 3 days installing my internet. Like, that's just like a tragedy. I had to link to my phone to get internet. Come on, you know. And versus you go to somebody else. I've been to plenty of houses. Hey, how do you get water? Oh, well, there's a public faucet down here. We have to go there, get it, bring it up here. Where do you go to the bathroom? Oh, there's out behind, there's a little, see the little house with the little moon on the door? That's for that. You know what? And all of a sudden, you don't think we're spoiled because we get whatever we want? Just start thinking about taking something away. And God doesn't give us everything we want because it ruins us. So Joseph's in jail. Like, he's been 10 years, really 2 more years have gone by, and now this is 12. Later on it's going to say he was 30 years old. So he was 17 then, he's 30 now. That's 13 years. He's been down, brought low. But you know what? You can't learn to be humble. You can't learn patience unless God does something in your life. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, "It is not in me to explain your dreams. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." And one of the things Joseph realizes, and I think Joseph has realized this a while ago, but it's absolutely clear. You know what? Could I interpret those dreams? Yes, but that was only because God gave me the interpretation. Could I do? Yeah, but only because of God. And starts, hey, you know what? Anything you're doing for somebody, anything you're doing to help somebody, anything that's happening, like, one of the big lessons to learn is this isn't about me. It's about God. And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Behold," and he explains the dream. "Behold, in my dream, I was standing on the banks of the Nile." And Joseph answered, "Is it not, I'm sorry, 7 cows, plump and attractive, came up out of the Nile and fed in the reed grass. 7 other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and thin, such as I had never seen in all of the land of Egypt. And the thin, ugly cows ate up the first 7 plump cows. But when they had eaten them, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were still as ugly as at the beginning. Then I awoke. I also, in my dream, dreamed of 7 ears growing on one stalk." I'm gonna spare you guys the illustration on this one, the animation. "Full and good, 7 ears, withered thin and blighted by the east wind, sprouted after them, and the thin ear swallowed up the 7 good ears. And after it, after I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me." So I had these two dreams, like we said, the fat cows eaten by the skinny cows, the fat corn eaten by the skinny corn. Nobody can know what this means. And then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the 7 lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years. And the 7 empty ears blighted by the east wind are also 7 years of famine. As it is as I told Pharaoh, God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be very severe." So, and then he says one more thought here. "And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about." So he's saying, look, you had a dream about the cows and the ears of grain, and really it's all one dream, and it was repeated for emphasis, to say, this is done, this is a fixed fact, this is going to happen, and it's going to start really soon. And so at this point, he's like, well, you need, now therefore, let Pharaoh, he starts going, well, now what are we going to do about it? Okay, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have 7 good years, followed by 7 really bad years. And if you know, I think everybody from California knows what a drought is. If you drive through the Central Valley of California, there's a lot of people that are that have major problems with their farms. You see huge farms that at one point were all fruit farms with apricots and almonds and other fruit, and the trees are all dead because they haven't been able to get water. And so he's given Pharaoh, like, not only did God tell me or has revealed what this dream means, but he's also revealing, what do we do about the dream? Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land during the seven plentiful years. So he's saying, look, what you're going to do is during the seven good years, you're going to take one-fifth, 20% of the produce, and then let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine. Isn't it so true that if we have a good year, then we think we're going to have another good year, and then we think we're going to have a better year after that, and a better year. And, you know, they went on. And if that goes on for 7 years, we had I don't know if any of you were aware of this, but in the early 2000s, there was a thing called the housing bubble. And every year, man, this is a great year. Your house went up in value by this much. Now it went up by this much. Now it went up. Hey, you know what? You can just take all this money out of it, and, you know, it's just going to keep going up. At this rate, the median house price is going to be over $1 million. So what's this $250,000 you owe here? Just keep. And you know, I read somebody that said, you know what? The good years are when we accumulate the debt so that we crash in the bad years. And part of it is that, and so the idea he's saying is, no, look, let's not just have a big, huge party because we're having all this grain. Let's not just get rid of it, sell it, do whatever. Let's save some because there could be a bad day coming. In fact, here we know there is a bad day coming. And he's saying, let's save, let's put it aside so when the famine hits, we won't be destroyed. And this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all of his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? So he asked his servants, well, okay, we do need somebody to administrate this. And who could we get to do this? And so they kind of look around. And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. And you know, isn't that true? Like, so often you see something and then you say, hey, you totally see it. God's shown it to you. You see this need. You see something that needs to happen. And then you go, hey, can you get somebody else to take care of this? Whoa, wait a second. God showed it to you. Maybe he has someone else too that he's shown. But a lot of times that's kind of an issue to like step up. A lot of times I have people come to me and go, well, John, you should do this, this, or this. Oh, really? Do you think that's really, God really has called us to do that? Yeah. Well, can you lead it? And sometimes you find out, well, or do you have someone else? Or how are we going to accomplish this? And let's start praying about it. Because I like that Joseph not only knew what the dream meant, but knew what to do about it. Okay, we're going to have 7 good years followed by 7 bad years. Then what are we going to do about it? Well, we're going to save up during the good years for the bad years. And then Pharaoh says, he asked Joseph, and he keeps going with his proposal here. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I've set you over all the land of Egypt. It's interesting how God takes these times of discouragement, times of we don't think God is really doing anything, and look at how bad this is, and look how horrible my life is, and look at this. But as in, we're in those low spots, God's preparing us for something else. So God, you could totally argue that Joseph never really did anything that's really required, that's wrong. Although he wasn't quite as discerning of a leader when he was 16, 17 years old, and he had the dream about the other guy's sheaves, bowing down to him, and he goes, "Hey, guys," to his brothers who are already mad at him because he has the special coat and his dad hasn't given them one, and his dad makes it clear that he's the special guy, not them. And then he goes, "Hey, I had this dream, and I was a sheaf and stood up, and all your sheaves bowed down to me." And they're like, "What are you trying to say to us?" Then he goes, even his dad wasn't really happy when he told the dream of, "Hey, I had this dream, and there were like 12 stars, and my star got here, and there was also the sun and the moon, and all of them bowed down to my star. Wasn't that a pretty cool dream?" I don't think he was really ready to be the head of Egypt at that point in his life. Might have been true, and it wasn't wrong, but it wasn't really getting the pulse beat of what you need to do to keep everybody with you. But when he got to Egypt, and he was in Potiphar's house, and he's a slave, what he does and the blessing on him becomes recognized, and he's faithful. He totally could have gotten there and gone, "Well, this isn't fair." You know what? It wasn't. "This isn't right." You know what? It wasn't. "I shouldn't be a slave." No, you shouldn't. But where are you? And what can you do about it? And what's the plan? Where do you go from here? "Well, they told me to do this. They told me," he starts off, I'm sure he's a 17-year-old kid, the first day on a job as a slave. "Okay, sweep the courtyard." You know, and then when he gets done, and they look at it and go, "Man, this courtyard looks great." Then pretty soon, "Can you wash the dishes?" Washes the dishes. "That looks great. Wow, everything he's doing, he does." Everybody's like, "Well, hey, look, can you oversee the other sweepers for the courtyard and make sure that they get it how you would get it?" "Sure." "Okay, can you watch over the dishwashers and make sure they wash the dishes how you would wash them?" "Sure." Pretty soon, "Hey, can you watch over the whole house so that they'll all run the things the way you would run them?" "Of course I will." And so he's top. And then once you have some authority and some power and you've got a position, now here comes the temptations and the testing, and Potiphar's wife throws herself at him. And he's like, no. And so not only is he tested in adversity, but he has like a place where he's got some power, and he's tested in that too. And he passes both tests. So then he gets slammed into prison. Well, you know what? Before you know it, he's in charge there. Because, "Hey, can you clean up your cell? Looks good. Okay, can you help make sure the guys in your area clean theirs up? Okay, can you make sure the food gets served? Can you?" "Yeah, pretty soon. Hey, can you just run this whole thing while I oversee you?" "Yeah." Then the guys come from the baker and the cupbearer show up. "Can you watch them?" Specifically says, "Hey, can you oversee them?" "Yes, I'll take care of it." These are the top guys, a really close relationship to the king. They have these dreams. "Hey, Joseph, we had these dreams. What do you think this means?" "Okay, yours means you're going to be restored. You're sorry, but you're going to die. I'd rather tell this guy about his dream than this guy about his dream, but hey, it's the way it is. Both of them come true." "Okay, will you remember me when you see the king?" "Sure, Joseph." And they go away and forget about him. So now he's done all this stuff, and he's down here, and it's like, man, what can you do? And they remember him. And this has taken 13 years. This wasn't like, because sometimes we think, well, you know what? If I just learn this lesson, then God's just going to lift me up. Yeah, maybe. But the thing is, you thought the lesson was today's homework. He thought the lesson was the whole coursework. You thought the lesson is, oh, if I can do this one problem, you've got it. No, he's saying finish the book. And then finish the series of books. And then we'll talk about it. Then we've got postgraduate studies for you. Man, when are we going to get to do, And eventually, he says, look, you're going to be over everything. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, clothed in garments of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him ride in his second chariot. So that was, they have Air Force One. This was Chariot Two. He made him ride in his second chariot, and they called out before him, "Bow the knee." Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. So all of a sudden, he goes from, all these dreams he had when he was a teenager that looked like absolutely impossible. I don't know. He's a second in the land to Pharaoh. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift a hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's names, Zaphnath Paneah, and he gave him in marriage to Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. So he's the number two guy in the country. He's out touring around, make sure that the grain is grown properly, make sure that the king gets his cut, make sure that the grain is stored properly, make sure he's overseeing, he's running the country. And he's not just running it from his office. He's out seeing what's going on and really trying to make something happen here. And he is making it happen. During the seven plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly, and he gathered up all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food from the fields around it. So, okay, there's cities, they all have their fields. Okay, we're storing 20% of this year's in these silos. Then next year we've got another huge crop. Okay, we're taking 20%, we're storing it. So, you know, you get all these silos filled with all this grain. And it over this whole period of 7 years. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. He's got grain, you know, up to his ears in grain. And he's trying, you know, I've been reading a biography of Benjamin Franklin, and his whole thing, you know, a penny saved is a penny earned. And he has all those quotes like that, but his whole way of life, he totally believed in this. Be frugal. You spend what you need. Have the rest. You know, I like John Wesley's thing. You know, he gave his budget was, he made 20 pound, which, you know, I don't know what that really would be today's money, because you've had two or 300 years difference plus a different type of currency. So whatever, he made 20 pound a year, and he said his expenses were 19 pound, and then he gave away whatever, and then his income rose, and his expenses stayed at 19 pound, and he had this, you know, and then every year his income goes up, but his expenses stayed about the same. And it wasn't like, oh wow, I had more money, let's just spend it. We had a bigger grain, hey, big party. No, it's like, let's eat what we need. We got plenty to eat. We'll be feeling good. In Spain, they have a saying that says, hey, you never had a bad year because there was a big grain harvest. And so we'll take advantage. We're going to eat. We'll be fine, but we're going to put some aside. We got plenty. Let's put some aside. And now he's got this big pile. I'm sure people are going, what are you saving this for? There's no way. It's beyond measure. We can't even measure it. Why are you even saving this? No, we're saving it. We're putting it up. We're saving it for a non-rainy day. Before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my hardships and all my father's house. And you know what's funny? Is once you've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and he waited for these 13 years, and then all of a sudden, now he has everything. And it's during this period of 7 years, and even Manasseh, because you know what? Once it's over, it's over. Once you get through, it's kind of like, you know, once if you're stumbling around in the dark and it seems like it's been going on forever and ever, once the sun comes out, it's light. And you kind of remember, oh yeah, it was stumbling around, but I'm not now, I'm fine. I know, I think one day, I don't know if I can really predict this or not based on history, but you know, if the Chargers ever won the Super Bowl, all the years of futility might be forgotten. You know what I mean? And I guarantee you this, if they won 3 Super Bowls in a short period of time, like 3 years, everybody would be kind of, oh yeah, the Chargers are great, and they've always been great, and you just forget about it. Like, nobody remembers the 1 in 15 seasons and that kind of thing, the number 3 draft choice, you know, all that, woohoo, you know, then you forget about it. And sometimes in your life, you're going through this part. You're going through the bad seasons. You're going through the bad seasons. When you reach the good season, all of a sudden, hey, name him Manessa. Because God's made me forget all the hardship and all of my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Wow, I didn't want to come here. I was a slave for a big, long time. I was in prison for a long time. And this is the land of my affliction, but God has made me fruitful in this land. And kind of a play on children plus all the grain he's collecting. It's just a fruitful time in his life. And then the 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end. And the 7 years of famine began to come. As Joseph had said, there was famine in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph. What he says to you, do. So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt, to Joseph, to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. So now you have the guy who his brothers were going to kill him. They threw him in a pit. He became a slave. He was thrown into jail. He was taken out of jail, forgotten, left there, taken out of jail. He's put into this position, and now the whole world's coming to him. Kind of thinking about Joseph's stock again. Oh, wait, it looks like it's going up significantly as he's out of jail. So I just want to mention a couple things real quick here about waiting. And I don't know where you are or what you're doing and what life is for you, but almost all of us feel we're waiting for something. Where there's something that's happening to you that's not fair, that's not right, or you have some other thing. I talked to my brother on Friday, and I talked to my sister yesterday, but my brother is going through chemotherapy. I mentioned this last week. And I guess he's had a really bad reaction. And he had his first week, the week before last. And then this week, about Wednesday or Thursday, they put him in the hospital because he had a real high fever. And then yesterday they said his fever was 104 plus. And for an adult, we all know that that's not really very good. And it's part of it's like, man, you know, why? What am I waiting for? What's God doing? And I realize it's not, everyone isn't going through chemotherapy. But you're going through things, and part of this therapy is to actually save his life. And part of what you're going through, God has you through things that are extremely difficult and extremely unfair. Nobody ever said all this stuff that happened to Joseph was fair. It wasn't right. Was it right for his brothers to sell him as a slave? Was it right to threaten to kill him? Why? Because Dad liked him? Was that right? None of that was right. But that doesn't mean God wasn't using it in Joseph's life. And there's all kinds of things that come up in your life and my life that we just, this isn't right. You know what? You're probably right. So waiting is kind of like God's school. Like you say, we think we're done when we finish the problem. He says, no, there's a whole course I've got for you. I've got, you know, I went to school for a long time. I felt like after 12 years, that's good. Fine. Actually, 13, if you count kindergarten. Man, I did those 13 years. Woohoo! I am done. I'm never going back. I'm never going to school again. And then later on, well, maybe I could try some school. So then I did another, you know, I squeezed 4 into 5 kind of thing. So I got a degree. Then eventually, I want to get a master's degree. And, you know, it's like, why? Well, you know what? Because I keep thinking, I've learned the lesson. No, you have more to learn. And part of the thing is we think we've learned the lesson, but God has us waiting to learn other lessons because we don't know what we don't know. We think we know stuff, and then we only learn it when it's... And honestly, you learn so much more through failure, through difficulty, through things that are hard than you ever learn. Listen, I love being blessed. Don't get me wrong on that. I prefer the time of blessing, but I learn more through the time of hardship. Always have. And you always have, and you always will, and I always will. Do we enjoy the time of fellowship and blessing? Great, enjoy it. But learn. Things aren't going the way I want. Well, God, what are you trying to show me? And like Joseph, you know, you go through, then learn the lessons. Like, don't take advantage when you think it's the time that God isn't doing anything. God's doing something. When you think, look, God is not, like, why has he deserted me? Where is God? No, he's doing something. You just have to figure out what it is. You might not see it for a while. But Joseph, to me it seems clear. All the training and things, the as a slave, oh, here we go, one more. Can I go here, learn a lesson? I thought I had both those up there. So learn the lessons. God's school, he's going to teach you. Look, Joseph was learning all kinds of lessons as a slave, as a jailkeeper, that were going to eventually pay off and make him a better leader. And he was prepared for the role that he had. And honestly, looking back on it, they go, man, Joseph was 30 years old. To be the head of Egypt when you're 30 years old, sounds like you've done pretty well to me. A lot of times you see somebody and you go, man, look, at God's just blessing them. But you don't know what they're learning at night when they can't sleep. And they get news and they get some letter and it's things are falling apart. And you don't know what's going on in somebody else's life. And how did God prepare them for that? You know, that's a whole process. Look, when you're in the middle of the process, it's time to thank God. I like, in James it says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness or patience, and let steadfastness or patience have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Like, oh, you want to be that diamond. And God says, okay, let me get a chisel and start knocking things off to make it like that. Let me put it on the polishing wheel and scrub it. Let me do this. And all the things that are having to happen to make that, yeah, I want that. And then God says, oh, really? Great. Well, here's what has to happen for that to happen. And he puts us through, sometimes we think it's a ringer, and sometimes it is. But that's how he works. Listen, I want to learn the lesson from Joseph, and I hope you do too. God is working when you don't see his hand. God is working when you just see things falling apart. God is working when it's the darkest night and you're not hearing or seeing anything from anyone. God is working. And at that point, we trust him. And then as we hang on, and see him bring it about. Sometimes in this life, sometimes not. But God is doing a work, and he wants to work in your life. Listen, if you're here and you don't know Jesus Christ as your Savior, you might go, well, you need to think about where are you with your life? And how do you deal with difficulties? And what is your response? Like, what are you going to do? The difficulties come. Whether you're a Christian or not. But when you're a Christian, all of a sudden you have a rock you're standing on. And God can work in your life, and he shows you and teaches you and molds you and makes you. I really encourage you. If you don't know Jesus as your Savior, that you put your faith in him. And it's as simple as going, Lord, I'm a sinner and I know it. I need your grace. I believe Jesus went to the cross. And I believe he died for me. And then trust. And from there you start growing. Listen, if you're a believer and you're going through something, today's the day to go, Lord, I don't see what you're doing, but I know you're doing something. And I want and help me take the next step. Help me deal with the next problem. I realize it's a big, long course, but I got the next problem in front of me. Let's deal with that. And trust him that one thing is going to lead to another thing. And he knows what he's doing. Let's pray. Father, we thank you, we praise you, we love you. We know, Lord, that you work in our hearts, our minds, our lives. You mold us and make us. Lord, you accept us how we are. But Lord, you want to change us and mold us into the people you want us to be. Lord, I thank you for this story of Joseph. I pray as we continue the story that we'll see how you continue to work. And then, Lord, I pray your blessing on each person here. That I'm sure that in a group this size, there's people who are going through very difficult situations. They're feeling like they have to wait and things are never going to change. But Lord, you know, and you're in charge. And Lord, I pray that we would trust you more. And I pray for anybody that's here that doesn't know Jesus, that today would be their day to put their faith. And right now with me, just in the quietness of their heart, they might pray, Lord, I know I've done things wrong. I've messed up. But I believe in Jesus and that he paid for everything for me on the cross, and I trust in him. Lord, we just pray that you would just do a work in us and through us and use us to bring the light of Christ, the light of your word, the light of your truth, and reflect, Father, who you are to those around us.